How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are what the back page says you are.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Fantrax and Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast is also brought to you by Lucas Smith, who's today's Patreon sponsor. If you want to be a Patreon of the show, head across to patreon.com/redrock_bball and you can support the show in whatever way that you can. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. What we're going to do today, of course, is look at all 10 games that happened on Saturday. We'll preview the very lean three-game Sunday and have a bit of a chat about the Zach LaVine ACL injury that the information was announced a couple of hours before game time on Saturday. So
let's get to it.
Before we do get to it, though, just one thing I do want to mention. It was inspired by a Twitter conversation that I had with someone. They sent me some messages, and they said, Josh, can you give me some help? I'm talking with a few of my mates here, and we're arguing, and they're in the NBA is trash now group, which, you know, I hate that group. You know, I hate that that line of thinking, I guess is the best way of saying it, because it just really isn't. There's so many reasons why it's not. And I said, okay, I'll help you out, because it really pisses me off, because people do have very rose-colored glasses when they look back on stuff that happened in the past. So I said, what are they comparing it to? Are they talking about 80s basketball? Are they talking 90s basketball? He said, they're talking about early 2000s, because they're Lakers fans, and that's when Lakers used to win. So now, of course, the NBA is garbage, which is a ridiculous line of thinking to begin with. But what I did is I went into some stats to have a look. I just picked a random year that the Lakers won the title, and I picked the 2000-2001 season and compared it to the numbers we've got so far this season. So in terms of what makes the NBA good or not, I guess it's quite subjective. But I picked a few things which I think would be almost inarguable that you could say makes the game better or more enjoyable as a product. I've already talked about the increase in depth I think there is in the league with just so many better players around. But these are some stats that I found from that time period. NBA teams this season are averaging 105 points per game. In the year 2000-2001, they're averaging 94 points per game. 11 points per game per team. Per game. Games are still 48 minutes, so there's more scoring. I don't think anyone would argue that more scoring generally means better. In general. They're shooting better. Back in 2000, they shot 44% from the field. This season, 46% from the field. Okay. Oh, but no one's got any skill anymore, man. All these big men, they can't hit free throws. Cool. Free throws this season, 77%. Back in 2000-2001, 74%. All right. And they also go to the line less. So less boring free throws, less hacking, less fouls, which is not, you know, that's not a part of an exciting basketball at all. How about the pace of the game? 96 possessions per game to 91 on average per team. So we're playing faster, more high scoring, better shooting basketball. Hard to argue any of those things aren't positive. Back in 2000-2001 season, teams averaged for the entire season 212 dunks. This season, in 49 games on average per team, there's been 186 dunks. So with 33 games to go, these teams need to dunk it, how's my math, 23 more times in those 30 games? I reckon they'll average more than one dunk per game. So let's recap. More scoring, better pace, better shooting, less free throws, better free throw shooting, more dunks. The NBA is better. It's just as simple as that. It is better. And you can talk about the Warriors being great. There's always been dominant teams. Have a look at how spread out the rest of the NBA is. There are upsets all the time. The Kings beat the Warriors today, for God's sake. There is spread out things. You can go back to the 90s and have a look at how good the Bulls were, and then have a look at how crap so many teams were. There is more consistency through the middle ranges of teams, plus the on-court product is better. People going back to talk about, oh, it was better back then, I just don't think they're looking at it through objective eyes. So that was something I wanted to share with you, something that I found out through 5 minutes of research that I think in a subjective manner tells you that objectively that it's better. Maybe you've got disagreements. Let me know. Let's talk monstrous line of the night. Steph Curry, 35 points, including 8 triples and a missed game-winning layup. 4 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 steals. He was 11 of 20 from the field and 5 of 6 from the free throw line. Steph has definitely stepped it up lately. He has been playing much better. In fact, over the last month, he is the number one ranked player in 8 cat leagues. Number one, averaging 29 points per game. He averaged 30 a game last year. He's averaging 29, 5.4 triples, 4.5 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 2 steals on 50, 88, and 47. These are numbers that are comparable to what he did last season. They're not quite there, but they're comparable. He is absolutely rolling at the moment. His last 3 games have given us 34, 4, and 9 with 3 steals and 7 triples a game on 57, 90, and 56. He is hitting 53% of his threes in his last 7 games. He is absolutely rolling, and it is not being necessarily noticed by everybody. But as I said, he's the number 3 player now this season. He's jumped up to number 3, and he is the number 1 player over the last month. So there were some hard times, maybe not hard, but there were some, oh man, why did I bother with Steph earlier on in the season? There was definitely some of that going on. Definitely, yeah, can't deny that. But for now, Steph is roasting. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Brandon Jennings of the New York Knicks. Jennings, in place of Derrick Rose, had 23, 5, and 10. He hit 6 triples, he had 2 steals, and he was a very un-Brandon Jennings-like 8 of 13 from the field. Jennings has been very good in place of Rose. In fact, in the last 2 weeks, he's averaging 37 minutes a game in place of Rose. 13.5 points, 2.3 triples, 3 boards, 6.5 assists, 2 steals. Yes, he's still shooting 36%, but almost 2 years removed from his Achilles injury, he's almost back to that form that we saw from him back in Detroit. In fact, these last 2 weeks where he's averaging 13.5, 3, and 6.5, back in Detroit before he did his Achilles, he was at 15.5, 2.5, and 6.5. Mind you, in 8 less minutes. So he's not quite the same player, but he's looking a lot better. Questions coming my way, what do I do with Jennings? Do I keep him? Do I add him over this guy? Look, he's been good. You cannot deny that he has been good in this playing time, but I really can't, in my head, see Rose coming back and then just going, sorry, Derek, man, you're just going to have to sit it out now, and you'll have to play the 18-minute backup role. I don't see Jennings and Rose playing together for long stretches. I think he goes back to this 21, 22-minute role, which takes him out of consideration for most standard formats. Now, it's not for all of them because his ability to get assists can be very useful. I've talked about that plenty this season. In 25 minutes a game this year, he's averaging 5 assists per game. Yeah, you get 5 assists per game, regardless of some of the other stuff, that can really help you. But it's not going to be for everyone. It's going to be a situation where he gets used in certain situations. Is my team borderline assist? Am I looking at the playoffs and I'm competitive with these guys and I need an assist guy to put me over? Blocks, it's not going to matter because I'm going to lose them anyway. So do you switch out one of those guys and get your 4 or 5 assists from Brandon Jennings with some of the other deficits that he has? But he has been playing fantastically lately, and that is inflating his numbers, and I don't really see there's any way that he can stick even at high 20s in minutes, because they just won't play him together with Rose all that often, because that's a terrible combination. And he's not taking over Derek Rose's job. I don't believe, maybe it happens. I would be pretty stunned if that did go down and he did take that job off Derek Rose. I just don't see that. I just don't see that being something that's going to happen for the Knicks. Some weird shit does happen there, but that's not one of them. The young gun of the night, I'm not going to spend too much time on Karl-Anthony Towns. He had 27 and 16 with 2 triples, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, 9 of 10 from the line, 8 of 15 from the field. He's just really, really good, and he is motoring, and he's the number 5 player over the last month, and you love it. Nothing more to say about Townsy. Absolutely crushing it at the moment. The dud of the night, we go to Detroit, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Yes, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope 2 games ago had 38 points with 8 triples. He has combined in the last 2 games for 6 points. This is classic Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, but not only is he not scoring, not only is he not shooting, but he is not hitting those shots. In that game against the Pelicans where he had 38 points, he took 18 shots. In the next 2 games combined, he's taken 16 and hit 3 of them. So he was 12 for 18 in one game, 3 for 16 in the next two. So not now that's something that's never been a criticism of Caldwell Pope. It's like, man, this guy will just keep shooting. They'll keep going back to him. They'll keep the confidence going. But it hasn't happened. And that's a little weird that they've just sort of frozen him out of the offense. Now, it has coincided with two fluky-ass Marcus Morris games where he's been playing fantastically. So maybe that's part of it. The minutes have still been there for KCP. If I own him, I'm not panicking or anything like that, but it's just been a little bit of a pain in the ass with those shots not appearing, and then when he does get the shot, them not falling. But I'm not bothering too much to care, you know, greatly about it at this point. All right, let's move into these games now. Where are we? We'll talk about them now in some extra detail. The first game we're going to take a look at, there were 10 of them, so let's strap in and get ready for it. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Washington Wizards. Tony Davis, 25 and 10 with a steal and two blocks. Fair enough. Terrence Jones remained starting, played 13 minutes, had 15 and 4. Wasn't a good night from the line where he went 4 of 9, but decent numbers, including two blocks. While he's starting, you own him. It's as simple as that for Jones. Tyreek Evans, after I've been frustrated with him for big stretches of time, he played the most minutes he's played apart from that one game when Davis was injured. 27 minutes for Tyreek, 15, 6, and 2 with two triples and a steal. The big problem with Evans is that Gentry just has had no confidence in going to him. He just has played him like 18, 17 minutes a night every game. And it wasn't a minutes restriction thing. The 27 might be a restriction thing, but the fact that he got these extra minutes is definitely a positive. If he was dropped, I wouldn't be scurrying to go back and get him because I'm just not sold on Gentry going, right, Tyreek, you're locking in at 27 a night now, especially when he's got the ability to run Bud Hield out there, who had 6 points in 23, or Etwan Moore, who had two in 25. Evans is clearly more talented than those players, but whether Gentry believes that he will continue to give him big minutes remains to be seen. His upside is comfortably better than all those players, and it could be easily better than whoever your 13th guy is. So in that case, if he was dropped, you grab him. But I'm still not 100% sold. Solly Hill had a triple one, but we know what he is. He's a deeper league guy. Well, Drew Holiday wasn't shooting the ball well. 5 of 17 for Drew, but had 13, 10, and 8. So still racked up some of those counting stats there. Over to the Wizards, a pretty familiar story with the Wizards. The starters were all great. 24, 3, and 13 with 5 steals for Johnny Wall. Otto Porter had 12 and 9 with 3 steals. At least he took some shots in this one. Marcin Gortat, a 12 and 17 night with a block. Big night from Gortat, but Yanmi Hinmi is apparently coming back. Now, we've heard this a couple of times already. When Mihinmi comes back, I don't think it's going to impact Gortat initially, but it could be a real issue in March. And by issue, I mean it just will mean Gortat won't play 36 or 35 minutes. He might play 30. And that big drop-off could be impactful for you. I don't think it's happening in February, but March is going to be the time where it could really bite you in the ass. So it's just a matter of, if Gortat gets included in any trade deals, you want to make sure that if he's coming your way, you're not paying top 50 value for him. And if he's going the other way, you want to try and capitalize on his current value, which is around that sort of mark. Actually, forget that. It's not even around that mark. He's the 21st ranked player over the last 2 weeks in 31 minutes a game, averaging 15 and 11. Sure, shooting 75%, which are numbers that are unrealistic. But there is a chance that he drops back off. Markeith had 18 and 4, and Bradles-Beal had 12, 5 and 3. On the bench, not much to talk about. Kelly Oubre got into double digits, so that was good after his absolute stinker the other day. 10 points in 23 minutes for Kelly, just a nice deep league guy who's going to be the mainstay of that bench unit. The Detroit Pistons and the Indiana Pacers. We had there Marcus Morris after that career night. He went back to the well and did it again. 19, 6 and 4 for Marcus. 3 triples, 1 steal, 1 block. Really good stuff. You know, trusting Marcus Morris is not a great idea. It's not an awesome idea. And in fact, in these last 2 weeks, he's playing 36 a night and he's averaging 17 points. So on the surface, you go, you know what, that's brilliant. But he's still the 110th ranked player with those numbers because he just does such little stuff elsewhere. He doesn't block any shots. His steals are limited. He gets no assists. He's a poor rebounder. And in this time frame, he's actually shooting the ball well, which is not one of his strengths. You can absolutely own him while he's here doing what he's doing, and he's going to provide nice scoring numbers, but we've seen this story from him plenty of times. Andre Drummond was middling, 13 and 9 with a steal and a block, and the point guard situation continues to be frustrating. 27 minutes for Reggie Jackson. We know that Stan Van Gundy likes to keep tabs on his starting point guard, and that's 4 straight under 30 minutes for Reggie. 7, 3, and 5, or Ish Smith had 4, 2, and 6. in that playing time. I talked about Jennings for the deeper leagues. If Smith's the guy that you look at in those situations as well, just to get those assists in. As for Reggie Jackson, if you own him, what can you do? You can't do much. You just hold on to him. I never thought he had top 50 upside, really, at all, given the way that Van Gundy runs the point guard. There was a little run, maybe late December, where he was giving him 32 or 33 minutes. I went, oh, maybe he's diverting from his long-held, seemingly nonsensical thought process that starting point guards can't play more than 30 minutes. For whatever reason, he has that in his head. I have no idea. But he's back to that at the moment, and it's impacting what Reggie can do. And not much else. Toby Harris was poor. He had 8 points in 23 minutes, and he has really dropped off the last couple, while the tackle box John Lua had 14 and 7 in 27 minutes, one of his better games. I still don't think that he is a strong 12-team ad. For the Pacers, Thad Young was out, and they did, in fact, go to Lavoie Allen, who saluted. 32 minutes for Lavoie. Back when he was in Philadelphia, he was always a guy that could come in and grab a ton of rebounds, and that's what he did. He had 18 points with 11 boards, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block. Now, I'm not sure I really want to live in a world where Lavoie Allen takes the most shots on the team, and I'm pretty sure that after today, that world won't exist. But that's what happened today. He took the most shots for the Pacers, more than Paul George, more than Miles Turner, more than Jeff Teague. Just shit that doesn't make a huge amount of sense. Now, we don't know if Young is going to miss any more time, so grabbing Allen is not a high priority. But if you hear that Thad is out for an extended period of time, yeah, Lavoie is going to provide double-double, low-end double-double type numbers with some okay-ish percentages. And that might be enough for you, especially, say, in a 14-teamer and maybe a 12, probably not a 10-team league. But it's worth looking at. Paulie George had 21, 3, and 4, while CJ Miles started again, had 13 in 27 minutes with 2 triples. Deep leagues. This is probably the last time I'm going to say, but Monte Ellis has finished 3, 5, and 2 in 24 minutes for Monte. And Jeff Teague had an okay Jeff Teague night, 13, 2, and 7 for Teague, while Miles Turner had 13 and 6 with a pair of steals and a block. Not much else happening for the Pacers in this game. The Orlando Magic and the Atlanta Hawks, geez, the Magic were terrible. They got absolutely destroyed, so therefore the minutes, they were spread all over the place. The only player on the Magic to exceed 30 minutes was Evan Fournier, and he scored 9 points on 12 shots. Vucevic had only 24 minutes. Biyombo played 25 minutes. Jeff Green had 18 minutes.
My name is Jeff.
Alfred Payton played just 26, Lord Alfred, and scored 12 on 12 shots. Just a complete nightmare. But the one guy who I have been fairly critical of recently, Aaron Gordon, turned up. 26 minutes for Gordon, 16 points on 10 shots, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. I wouldn't be using this game as fuel for me to go, yep, see, need to hold him, or see, got to go and grab him. He's just been piss poor for weeks and really just taking up a spot on your roster. CJ Watson didn't get the 30 minutes again, so that's a relief. Only played 20 and had 8, 2, and 3 with 2 triples. You can leave him for the deeper stuff while Serge struggled. For the Hawks, no Tarbo, so Timmy Hardaway started again. 21, 5, and 2 for Tim. 3 triples and 2 steals and did it on 57% shooting. We know that the shooting for him is fluky, but he is putting up top 100 value over the last month. The minutes are on the rise. No problem with owning Tim. You know there's going to be some nights where he plays 23 minutes and scores 7 points. That's going to happen. And he doesn't contribute in many other areas, but to be fair to him, he has improved that. He's improved his percentages, and he's improved his ability to get assists and do some stuff with steals as well. And his rebounding has almost doubled over the last couple of weeks, and that's a big reason why his value has spiked. So Tim Hardaway, fine to own. Dennis Schroeder bounced back, only needed 26 minutes to do it. 17, 4, and 10 for Schroeder, while Kent Bazemore, much like Hardaway, he's a top 100 player over the last month. He had 8, 3, and 3 with 2 steals. Wasn't his best game, but he's got a place in leagues as well. As much as I don't think he's a great player, he is a back-end 12-team league guy. Not much else really happening with the Hawks. Paulie Millsap was all right. Dwight Howard was decent, but nothing to really write home about or to really break down in too much detail. The Philadelphia 76ers, they took on the Miami Heat, and they were the victims of the Heat's 10th straight victory. Yes, 10 straight for Miami. The Philadelphia side, there was no Jahlil Okafor, there was no Joel Embiid, there was no Bob Cove, and then Nerlens Noel, who was questionable heading into the game, he got pumped by Hassan Whiteside. Noel played under 20 minutes, had 7-7 with 2 steals, so the numbers are still okay. He is fine to own, but as I continue to say, his upside is not high. With all the centers either out or struggling, Rishon Holmes stepped up, 24 minutes for Holmesy, 12 and 9, 2 assists and a steal. you know that I've been on record telling you that I think Holmes is probably a better player than Okafor. And I think that if the Sixers could find good deals for both Noel and Okafor, they'd feel okay about it because Rishon Holmes is a backup center in the league. He's like Norm Powell in that he's too good to be listed as a fourth string guy. He is a backup. I don't think he's necessarily a starting center anywhere, but he's a guy that in team leagues of 18 teams, he's a valuable player if he fits into a backup role. That's just a long way off in Philly at the moment. TJ McConnell had 11-2-4, while Ersan Ilyasova dropped just 21 more points, 5 rebounds and 3 triples. Another big night for Ersan. And Gerald Henderson, who went from a weird DMP CD to starting, he played 25 minutes and had 12 points with 2 assists and a steal. That moved Dario Saric back to the bench, who had 4 points on 1 of 9 shooting, and Timote Luwawu-Cabarro had 9 in 26 minutes. Neither Luwawu-Cabarro or Saric are standard league guys, even while Bob Cubb is out. For the rampaging Heat, Hassan Whiteside, I know plenty of people have been disappointed with Whiteside this season because they picked him early and incorrectly people are, it's because he got paid. It's because last year was a contract year. That's why he was so good and that's why he's so bad this year. You know my thoughts on that. It is absolutely untrue. Contract years are myths. Not myths, they exist. They don't make players all of a sudden play better because for every example you can find of someone playing better, you can find the equal amount of examples of someone being the same or someone being worse or someone improving, getting paid, and then getting better again the next season, not motivated by money when they could be lazy. Oh man, I just got paid $140 million. I'm going to sit on my ass and not do anything, which is what the assumption is with Whiteside, that he got paid and went, nah, I'm done with this. And players get better. DeMar DeRozan, great example. Got paid. Huge contract. Mike Conley, biggest contract in NBA history. Both having career seasons after getting paid. Conley could sit down and go, well, this is my last contract. I'm done. By this mentality, by this theory, if they get paid and they give up, or when it's their contract year, they play real hard. What I'm trying to say is that Whiteside hasn't been as bad as what has been bandied about. The last 2 weeks, he's played under 29 minutes a game. He's still at 14-12.5 with 2 blocks on 54% shooting. A big dip in his value has been his free throws, which has been pretty inexplicable, to be honest, given that he fixed it for 3 months last year, reverted his form, and couldn't hit them again. And then when he tried to go back to it, it just didn't work. That was just a very weird thing. But let's talk about exactly what he did today. He only needed to play 27 minutes. He had 30 points and 20 rebounds and blocked 3 shots and had 82% shooting from the field. And, if a good measure, went 67% from the line. So a huge night from Hassan. He was a guy that I've been encouraging you to try and buy low on over the last few weeks. If you did, you'd be pretty bloody wrapped with that. As for Dion Waiters, 26 minutes for Dion Waiters. 21 points, 10 shots, 70% shooting, 7 assists, 5 triples, 2 steals and a block. He is killing it at the moment. I don't understand how this continues to happen. He is a top 40 player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 22, 4.5 and 5.5, and shooting 50% from the field. In fact, he is shooting 50 from the field and only 65 from the line and 54 from 3. 2 of those numbers you know aren't going to stay where they are. Actually, 3 of them. The minutes, the field goal percentage, the 3-point percentage, and then conversely the points and the threes, and the ranking. So lots of numbers aren't going to stay where they are. Joshy Richardson is on his way back. He could be back in the next couple of games. And that's going to impact what Waiters can do because he won't continue to shoot like this. He's not Isaiah Thomas. And he just won't be in as prominent a role, I don't believe. But for now, keep going. Just ride it out. Almada. He only played 16 minutes, Jim, but he was still good. 10-6-3 with 2 steals. I'll never understand Spoelstra refusing to play him bigger minutes. This was a game where he wasn't needed, but still, he needs to play more than spuds like Akaro White and Luke Babbitt. By the way, look, Akaro White never lost a game in the NBA, but this was a game that Udonis Haslem played 7 minutes. So it gives you an idea of the competitiveness down the stretch. Johnson was still good. Tyler Johnson needs to be owned everywhere as well. 16-6-6 with a steal and a block, while Dragic had 16-4-8. Scooter Magruder left the game with an illness, but if you look at his line, it looks like he played 30 minutes anyway. 0 points, 0 rebounds, 1 assist. That's a pretty standard Scooter Magruder line. Let's talk Cleveland and the Knicks. LeBronald. Oh, there was no Kyrie in this game, out with some back issues. It wasn't back issues, was it? It was a quad soreness. My mistake. LeBronald, 32, 5, and 10. Kevin Love returned. He went 23 and 16. He's the one that had the back issue. Four triples with a steal. So big nights, as expected, from those guys. And Tristan Thompson, just sort of in the middle, 12 and 5 for Tomo in his 32 minutes. And Channing Frye chimed in for 14 points on 9 shots. Not much else to talk about with the Cavs. Iman Shumpert played a lot of point guard. 36 minutes for him. 5, 9, and 2. And DeAndre Liggins, he started in place of Kyrie and had 5 and 3. Shumpert's fine to own, but the shooting is dropping off now, so that takes away a lot of his supposed value, I guess is the best way of putting it. He's down to being ranked outside the top 130 over the last 2 weeks, shooting 38%. Yeah, he was a top 100 guy at one stage because he was shooting 57%. So that's dropped right off. So, you know, far from being a must-own guy. On the Knicks, real early foul trouble for Kristaps here. Only played 29 minutes, 9 and 8 with 2 assists, 1 steal and 3 blocks, and he's definitely frustrating. I know plenty of people who own him who are frustrating. He's barely inside the top 100 over the last 2 weeks. It's a great buy low opportunity. He's only playing under 28 minutes in that time. He's at 14 points and 7 rebounds with 2 blocks and a 3. He's shooting 27% from 3. All of this stuff can comfortably improve, and if you can buy him really low, then you do it. I think it's a great opportunity to do that. Now, Joakim Noah left the game with a hamstring issue and wasn't able to return. Only 6 minutes for Noah. 4 and 2. He's terrible. But does this give an excuse for Jeff Hornacek to just go full Billy Hernan Gomez? Billy played 36 minutes, had 16, 5 and 5 with 2 blocks. You got to own him. It's as simple as that. Should be owned in all leagues at this point. We cannot trust Hornacek. We know that. But this is the most trust that I feel like I can have in him. At this point now, thinking, all right, Noah's hurt his hamstring. Noah's also terrible. Hernan Gomez is playing big minutes in like 80% of the recent games, excluding that 68-minute game where he played 3 minutes, which I'll never get over. He's putting up numbers. Has to be owned. Courtney Lee had a good night as well, 17 and 4. I leave him for the deeper leagues, though. And Mello really stunk. 17 points is good. 20 shots is not good to get there. 6 boards, 2 steals, 1 block. A decent all-round line, I guess, from Carmelo Anthony. Let's talk Denver and San Antonio. There was some disappointment in this one. Nikola Jokic got in some early foul trouble and ended up playing just 15 minutes. 11, 1, and 2. So it wasn't just the foul trouble. Mike Malone packed this one away halfway through the third quarter. After 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, the starters did not re-enter the game. The Nuggets were getting spanked. They ended up losing by 24 points, and they just didn't play. So going over this lineup with this box score with a fine-tooth comb benefits no one, because that's why the minutes are down. Fareed played 14 minutes. Jameer, 22. Wilson Chandler. Because I'm looking because it's got Wilson Chandler and the player under him is Jameer Nelson. I just combined them into Willie Nelson. Wilson Chandler, 26 minutes. And Gaz Harris played 25. And then we got off the bench, Fartin Will Barton with 25. Wancho had 22. Yusuf Nurkic had 24 and had 9 and 8. So a decent Nurkic game. Still don't think that he's worth holding on to. And Jamal Murray had 20 points in 23 minutes. But just an absolute nightmare of a game for the Nuggets. On to the Spurs. Tone Parker, he does this occasionally. 23 minutes for Tone, 18 points because he didn't miss a shot. 8 of 8 from the field, 2 of 2 from the line. 4 assists and 3 steals. Really just a 14-team league sort of a player. And Manu Ginobili played 10 minutes, scored 18 points. What? 4 triples with a steal in 10 minutes for Manu. Much like the Denver box score, there's not much point reading too much into it. The same story goes with the Spurs. They did keep Dwayne Dedman in the starting lineup next to LaMarcus Aldridge. He played only 14 minutes. Davis Bertans played 19, and Dave Lee played 21. So I think that's the way it's going to go a lot of the time. It's just going to be pissy little minutes amounts for those players, rendering Lee, Dedman, and Bertans not worth looking at in 12s. More Lee for 14s, Dedman for 16s, Bertans for 18-team leagues, I think would be the best way of looking at that. John Simmons had 18 points in his 22 minutes. But again, this game was such a spanking that Joel Anthony played 15 minutes. The next game, the Memphis Grizzlies and the Minnesota Timberwolves. There was no Marc Gasol. He was resting. There was no Chandler Parsons. He was resting. So we had Jim Ennis and Zach Randolph starting. Randolph started, played 31 minutes. He'd been on a roll. Yeah, that ended. He had 9 points on 15 shots. 10 rebounds, a steal and a block, he's okay to own, but he probably shouldn't be owned in 79% of leagues. Really helpful in double-double formats, but not a guy that is an absolute, oh my God, I have to make sure I've got Zach Randolph. Now, he's inside the top 100 over the last couple of weeks, granted. And he's giving you 17 and 9, so that's great. As per usual, he's giving you nothing else, and his field goal percentage is way up as opposed to what it's been this season at 54% in these last 2 weeks. So I'm not all that confident that he's going to remain at that high of a level, but he's fine to go with for now. Jim Ennis had a nice night, 13-6 with 2 steals and 3 triples, and Jermichael Green out of nowhere, really, because he's been terrible. 29 points in 30 minutes for Greeny, 6 rebounds, a triple one, 73% shooting, great. He's a deep league player. That is it. Also, the best news, I reckon, is Brandon Wright played 20 minutes. 4-6 for 90 with 2 steals. It doesn't really influence much in fantasy, but the dude has missed so much time. It was just great to see him out there for that many minutes. For the Wolves, let's just talk about the Zach LaVine situation first. LaVine suffered a knee contusion yesterday. Turns out it wasn't a contusion. He tore his friggin' ACL. So he's obviously gone for the season. He will miss a bit of next season, I would have to guess. We saw Jabari Parker tear his in January. He did return at the start of November, missed, I think, the first 3 or 4 games of the season. LaVine is a month later, so and Parker came back early and wasn't himself for about 2 months. So you would have to think that LaVine is going to miss most of November, probably December, and then be slow to come back January, February. So it almost, from a fantasy point of view, almost wipes him out of next year completely, be a nice playoff guy. That there's obviously lots of fluctuations there. If you're a guy in a dynasty league that's not looking to compete in the next year, probably this year or next season, try and see if you can acquire him now at this point and give away someone that might be seeing a decline in 2 years. Especially if he's on a winning team, see if you can try and get Zach, because it is going to be a little bit of time before he returns. Now, pre-game, this is what we talked about on yesterday's show, that when LaVine had missed time earlier this season, Brandon Rush stepped in and played 38, 39 minutes, even though he'd been DMP CDs before that. So we expected him to start, and that's exactly what happened. Rush started, but he only played 24 minutes. I mean, he played like 18 in the first half, and then Thibodeau went a different direction in the second half. He didn't go with Shabazz Muhammad, who played 26, which is not that much more than what he does normally. He had 11 points, and he is just not a good fantasy player. He scores. He does not much else. I don't think that grabbing Shabazz Muhammad in a 12-team league is the optimal move. I've grabbed Brandon Rush because we saw him contribute right across the box score. I don't know if it will last, but I think he's got a bigger upside than what Muhammad does if they give him these 35 minutes. But what they did is they brought my boy Tyus Jones in. They played him 24 minutes and he went 10-3-6 with 2 steals and a block and had 2 triples. I reckon I've lost my voice talking to you about how much I think Jones is a good player, how much I think that he is a better player than Chris Dunn, how much I think that he should be the backup point guard. He's the youngest point guard on this team. He should be with a guy that I reckon they developed. And I reckon if Chris Dunn went in the draft that Jones went in, Jones would have been picked ahead of him. That's what I believe. They don't believe that because this was a game that Chris Dunn was out of. So Jones got that opportunity. So we look at it, it looks brilliant. But if Dunn was available, would Dunn have got those 24 minutes? Would they have stuck with Rush? I don't know if that's what they would have done. I still think that Rush is the guy. Look, Muhammad's the guy in a 14-team league, you need some scoring. A standard league, you need some scoring. He'll give that. He'll give you nothing else, but he'll give you scoring. Rush is a very good shot blocker for a guard. He can hit threes. He can be efficient. He can pass. He can do numerous things. He can have value, and I've grabbed him. I haven't dropped him. Jones and Dunn are the interesting ones. Dunn is just not a good player at this point, and I'm not sure how much of a good fantasy contributor he will be. Jones, if he was getting 27 a night, 30 a night, it's a no-brainer ad. I have very little confidence in that happening, though, because I think Rush plays more next game, and I think Dunn comes in and takes his minutes away from Jones. But it is obviously a situation to monitor. One player I don't think is going to be benefiting too much is Nemanja Bjelica, and we did see that here. 14 minutes for Bally, 7 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists, while Wigo is going to get a bump in usage, as will Rick Rubio. Wigo had 23, 2, and 5, while Rubes had 14, 1, and 6 in 38 minutes. The poor shooting was back for Rubio. 15 shots, only made 5 of them. But he took 15 shots, the most on the team. So that's interesting. That's that increased usage with LaVine out that I was talking about. Gorgie Dieng only scored 2, but he did have 13 rebounds. Wasn't the greatest night for Big Gorgie. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Phoenix Suns. John Henson started again, played 25 minutes. So the John Henson downward slope continues. Henson starts, kid gives him 30 minutes, and then goes, oh, I remember why I didn't start you. Down to 27. Oh, I remember why I don't play you at all. Down to 24. Oh, shit. 20 minutes. 17 minutes. Oh, screw it. You're all just done. And that's just what always happens. I don't know. This is two games, so it's hard to read that trend into this, but it's just funny that it happened again. Henson played 25, had 15 and 7 with a steal and a block. So it wasn't a terrible night, but he's not a great player. I wouldn't be adding him in 12 teamers. I'd be looking in 14s and saying, oh, maybe this sticks, but it's never going to stick because it's Jason Kidd. And they still haven't been able to integrate Spencer Hawes and Roy Hibbert into this, which I don't know what's going to happen. Thon Maker, who 2 games ago, Thon Maker played 24 minutes, had 12 points, 3 triples, 3 blocks, looked good, has played 7 minutes in 2 games. Jason Kidd, you are a numbnuts. Thon had a 3 trillion, so it wasn't a great night, but this confusion is just baffling. I had a nice discussion with someone on Twitter today. I said, look, you know, wins keeps people's jobs, so he'll continue to do things, and if they get the win, that's great for him. And my argument is always, you know, getting a win by not having a process is luck. Getting wins by doing things the right way is sustainable. And I know that wins is what's everything, but that's a failing of management. And that's why some of these teams never go anywhere, because their management has no idea. Because if you're Phoenix, for example, which we'll talk about in a sec, if you're basing this season of how Earl Watson goes just on his ability to get wins, then you're doing it wrong. There are plenty of other reasons to criticize Earl Watson, but if you come in and go, look, Earl, you only won 25 games, that's terrible, when he was out there running a system, developing players, getting the core of the team for the future to work together and do stuff, then that's the wrong approach. If he comes in and wins 25 games by playing 37 minutes to Tyson Chandler and PJ Tucker, then you go, why are you bothering playing the veterans if you're still not going to win a friggin' game? That's the difference between that. So having no ability to put these players in a good position is why I don't think Kidd is a good player. And then if he's basing that, and let's be honest, Jason Kidd has got a massive influence on personnel and the GM part, so he is management anyway. So if they're basing on, oh, Jason, if you don't win games for his team, that's, you know, should be building slowly, but he can't build anything. He doesn't know how to build a program. He doesn't know how to build a culture of stuff. He doesn't know how to develop players, really, as a general rule, especially the big men. But enough on that. Greggy Munro, only 20 minutes. Again, he had been killing it. Now he's limited. 13-4 with 3 steals and a block. Didn't miss a shot. You still hold him. You add Munro. You add Henson in 14s, and let's see what happens. The point guard mess. What's going on? 26 minutes for Brogo. 13-5-8 with 3 steals. A great performance, but he had obviously been trending down before this performance. Will he be able to maintain value? Probably not when Chris Middleton returns, but for now, you just hold on to him. In fact, over the last 2 weeks, Brogo is the 103rd ranked player, and Dally is the 102nd. They're playing 27 minutes each. They're averaging almost exactly the same. Dally's at 10-6, Brogo's at 9.5. Brogo's getting more steals, Dally's shooting better. I like Brogdon a lot, but I think it's going to be hard for him to maintain 12-team league value when Middleton returns. It's just up and down, though. You know, Mirza Tolevic, who doesn't play, played 25 minutes and had 19 points with 2 triples. Just random shit like this happens all the time. I'll talk about the good things, because Yanni had 30, 12, and 6 with 4 blocks, and they scored 137 points as a team. Yes, they were going up against a dreadful defense, but it was a nice performance. Tone Snell is also being minimized, which is completely what should happen. Jabari had 18 and 9 as well. On to the Suns. This was the biggest Devin Booker game of all time. And by that, I don't mean it was his best game of all time. I mean, it's the biggest Devin Booker game. Devin Booker went scoreless in the first quarter. Devin Booker had 27 points in the second quarter. Red hot. Devin Booker had 4 points in the second half. So he's scoring first half, 31. 0 in the first quarter, 27 in the second. Second half, 4 points. 4 points. And that's why he's frustrating. I think we know how well he's been playing. He very much caters to the... If people think that he's an elite player, it's because they love points. It's simple as that. Points. Points are good. He scores 20 points a game. He gives up a shitload the other way. He doesn't do much in other areas. And that's going to be the issue for him fantasy-wise in his career, is that he needs... Look, he's still shooting 42% from the field on a massive amount of attempts. That's really hurting him there. He doesn't get enough steals, no blocks, no rebounds, limited assists. But the scoring is brilliant. But it's going to limit him from being a top 50 guy, which is still great, into a top 20 guy. I just don't know if he'll ever get to that level. He's obviously playing much better, and he's shooting the ball, yeah, so much better than what he did in the first 2 months of the season, or maybe first 6 weeks. He is shooting the ball so much better. And, you know, early on, I had a lot of arguments or discussions with people saying that he wasn't a good shooter, because honestly, he wasn't a good shooter. Now, he's shooting the ball fine. He's still just at 42% of the season, but he has improved significantly over the last couple of weeks. I'm just not sure if his game ever has enough depth to it or breadth to really evolve into an elite top 20 fantasy guy. And that's fine. He is what he is. Marquise Chris, man, 24 minutes for Chris, 27-6 with 3 triples and 2 blocks, a huge performance. That is 3 out of the last 4 games that Chris has played at least 24 minutes. He's got 24, 27, and 30, and then 16. Now, there was foul trouble in that 16-minute game. It does look like, and you can't be 100% sure, but it looks like Earl Watson's ready to go with him and play him 25 a night. In 25 a night, can he be a 12-team league guy? Well, not really. If he gets 27, then yeah. No problem taking it. I would easily grab Marquise Chris ahead of John Henson. No problem doing that, because I think that Chris is going to trend up, and hopefully Watson can just stick with him and just go, okay, just, man, that's fine. If you foul out in 25 minutes, whatever, just play. Don't keep him on the bench for 3 quarters because he got 2 early fouls, and then put him back in so he can play the last 6 minutes. I do think it's trending a little bit more towards that direction. Speaking of old players, PJ Tucker played 37 and went 13-4 and had 7 steals. He had as many steals as he had field goal attempts. Huge night from Tucker. I haven't been a fan of the way that Tucker has been used this season, but you can't argue with his results. He should be owned in most leagues at this point. He's the 56th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. You do have to feel that the numbers are going to drop, the minutes drop, if anybody else was coaching. They are also playing him a lot with TJ Warren, who played 37 minutes here, took 18 shots, so he was involved. He just didn't hit them. 5 of 18, and that's normally one of his strengths. 10, 8, and 4 with TJ. I probably wouldn't be rushing to grab him in 12-team leagues yet. Brandon Knight only saw 7 minutes. Ugh. And Eric Bledsoe had 13, 4, and 6. And he was equally as poor a shooter as what Warren was, hitting just 27%. That's a couple of games in a row that have been poor for him. Tyson Chandler only 25 minutes. So we saw a lot of Chris at center. In fact, the 5 most minutes played on this team was TJ Warren, PJ Tucker, Devin Booker, Eric Bledsoe, and Marquise Chris. So we saw lots of those situations with Tucker at the 4 and Chris and Chandler at the 5. Alex Len only saw 11 minutes, and I just have no hope for Len. I like Len as a player. I just don't see it happening for him in Phoenix. The Charlotte Hornets and the Utah Jazz, it was the debut of Miles Plumlee for the Hornets. He backed up Frank Kaminsky, played 18 minutes and went 4-8 with 2 blocks, and I reckon that's the perfect description of what he's going to do this season. He'll play 18 minutes, he'll get 4 points, maybe 8 rebounds, 2 blocks, maybe a little high. But that's enough for your deeper leagues, your 16, 18 team leagues maybe for Plumlee, probably 18, but that's enough for that. Mick Kidd-Gilchrist, 29 minutes, 7-6, and Ramon Sessions out, as I mentioned the other day, and Brian Roberts in. He had 4 assists in 13 minutes, Roberts, and assists are hard. Deep leagues, grab him. Marv Williams, fantastic recently, just a top 80 player over the last month, 16-12 with 3 threes, 3 steals and a block. The shots are going in. Now, the blocks aren't getting back to the same level as last season, but his total form level has improved dramatically. Should be owned everywhere. While Frank the Tank had 15 points, 2 steals, 3 triples, and 2 boards in his start at center. Own him while Zeller remains out. Nick Batum and Kemba Walker were just okay. For the Jazz, for some reason, Haywood always plays well against Charlotte. 33, 8, and 2 with 2 triples and a steal on 65% shooting. And even George Hill got into it, scoring 25 in 32 minutes as the Jazz got the victory. And Joe Johnson played 30 minutes, 18, 6, and 4 with 4 triples. I said it earlier that Monte Ellis is finished. I get the feeling that Derek Favors is finished. I'm less certain about it. But Favors missed the last 2 games for rest, came back in, came off the bench and played 2 minutes. No, he didn't. He played 10 minutes and he scored 2 points. he just looks toast. He looks done. Move on from him. Move on. He just... Quinn Snyder has no faith in him. Favors has no faith in himself. It's just a complete mess. I thought that he would continue to ramp up, but when the ramp gets flat, that's when you go, okay, it's time to move on here. It's gotten flat and it's turned into a decline, and he's rolling down the hill to mediocrity. He's going down to meet Monte down the bottom there. Joe Ingles started in place of Rocket Rodney Hood, 4-9 in 30 minutes for Ingles with two assists, with the emergence of Alec Burks, with the return of Alec Burks, with the play of Joe Johnson. I think Ingles is going to find it hard to get those 35 a night that he had the last time that Rocket was out, and he won't put up those numbers, so leave him for the deepers. While Joey Johnson, 18-6-4 with four triples in 30 minutes, playing well, and he looks so good as a four next to Rudy Gobert. They're going to run that rotation a bit, and that's also impacting what Favors can do. Boris Diaw started. He played 11 minutes. I don't understand what the point of that is at all. The last game of the night was the Golden State Warriors and the Sacramento Kings. The Warriors lost in overtime. I spoke about Steph already. Kevin Durant had 10, 9, and 2. Yes, Kevin Durant had 10 points on 10 shots. A horrible night from him. Had 5 blocks, though, which has been just, he's been ridiculous defensively. And Draymond was brilliant, too. 16, 8, and 6 with 3 triples, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. And Clay had 26 on 25 shots. Just stock standard stuff. JaVale McGee, who'd been playing well, had 3 points in 13 minutes, and that's why I wasn't looking at JaVale as being a guy that we needed to add while Zaza was out. It was fine in certain situations, but he just was never going to do enough to be a useful sort of player. For the Kings, Boogie, 32, 12, and 9, 2 steals and a block, 30 shots. Shit, that's a lot. But the other numbers were impressive, obviously. And Willie Cauley-Stein, another good game. 14-4 with 2 steals and a block. He looks a different player now than the guy we saw in July, than the guy we saw in October, November, December, January. He is much improved. He's not a 12-teamer, but he's a guy that in 16 teams, you take a flyer on. With no Garrett Temple, with no Omri Caspi, with no Rudy Gay, Anthony Tolliver played 36 minutes, had 11-5, and Matty Barnes had 11-14 with 2 triples, a steal, and a block. Barnesy can definitely be a standard league guy. I wouldn't say that he's a must-add guy, but he's playing more and he's playing better with all these other options out. Now, they did keep Ben McLemore in the starting lineup, even with Aaron Aflalo returning, and unsurprisingly, McLemore wasn't able to replicate what he did in Friday's game. He was still all right, 10 points with 3 steals, but it's not a high-priority situation. Well, Aaron Aflalo, he's really bad. 2 points in 36 minutes on 3 shots for Big Azza. How'd the point guards go? Well, the answer is mixed. 18 points in 33 minutes for Dazza Collison. 3 assists, near not great night. Ty Lawson, 7-1-4 in 20 minutes. Collison is the one to own. He is a 12-team guy, barely. Lawson is probably more of a 14-team league player at this point. All right. That does all of the games for Saturday. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk Super Bowl Sunday for DFS action. All right, guys, we're back. Let's talk perfect DFS lineups for Saturday. On FanDuel, Brandon Jennings had 47. Steph Curry had 56.3. At shooting guard, Timmy Hardaway, 33. And Yanni had 57.4. The small forwards, Gordo Haywood had 45.6 and Barnesy had 33.8. At power forward, Lavoie Allen 39.7 and Marquise Chris 38.2. And at centre, Hassan Whiteside 57 for a total of 408, and that cost $59,600. On DraftKings, Jennings 52.25, Brogo had 39.25, Yanni had 61.5, Marv Williams had 43, Lavoie had 42.75, Steph had 62, Jermichael Green, 42, and Hassan Whiteside at 61 for a total of 403.75 points, and that cost $49,300. What a bad way to say that. Now, before we get into DFS for Sunday, does anyone want my Super Bowl pick? I have watched one game in the NFL this season, I believe. I think I watched the first two Monday night games of the season. And one of those was a horrific 49ers-Rams game. I picked the Patriots. I'd love the Falcons to win. I'd love the Falcons to win because it just seems in pattern with everything that's happened over the 2016-17 season, with all of the underdogs, teams that never win, winning. The Cavs, Leicester City, the Cubs, the Bulldogs, of course. And the Falcons could be another one of those. be very. I would love them to win. I think the Patriots are going to win. But you don't come here for me to give uninformed NFL opinions. My opinion on the DFS slate for Sunday is stay away. There's three games on. There's no great value appearing. Small slates are more luck than anything. And often when I say that, people will reply, someone's got to win. True, someone does have to win. But your ability to control your ability to win it is marginalized in a situation where there's overlap between lineups, where it comes down to maybe one or two players making the difference between cashing or not cashing. And that's why I don't like to play late slates or anything like that, because I don't like two-game slates or three-game slates. I want five. I want seven. Yeah, 14 is a bit too much. I want seven. I want eight, five, six, that sort of zone. Three is a nightmare. So if you're going to play, and plenty of you are going to play, cut it back a bit. Minimize what you're doing. Don't go full volume, because it is not an ideal scenario. Just eat lots of chips and dip. Have some hot dogs. Don't stress about setting your lineup. Now remember, we must remember that all these games for Super Bowl Sunday start early, because the NBA wants to watch the Super Bowl. So we must remember they all start early. The first one starts at 1 p.m. and then we have a 2 p.m. game. That's not true. The first game starts at midday. Then we've got a 2 p.m. game. Then we've got a 3 p.m. game. And that's it. Three games on. Let's go through them. The first one of those is Toronto in Brooklyn. There is no spread out for this one because the Raptors have got quite a few players who may not play. Kyle Lowry is questionable with an illness. Pat Patterson is questionable with a knee contusion. I hope it's not a torn ACL. And DeMar DeRozan is questionable with a sore right ankle. Tons of value opens up if Lowry and DeRozan out. So that might be a reason where you can say, you know what, Josh, I can play these guys. Corey Joseph, Norm Powell. Yeah, Pat Patterson's out. We go with Bebe. There's lots of value that can appear. Sure, there is. But there's still going to be tons of overlap in this one. So just don't get too sucked into it. But obviously, now, if Lowry is out, the last game, Fred VanVleet played all the backup point guard minutes and Joseph played six. I think that Joseph still starts and gets his 30 and VanVleet comes in with a 22-minuter. But it will be one to watch. If DeRozan's out, it's all about Norm Powell. We all know how good Norm Powell can be. Bojan Bogdanovic missed the last game for the Nets due to rest. I don't think it's a Derek Favors rest, so he should be back, and that's going to limit what Caris LeVert can do, although LeVert may be better suited to coming off the bench and playing 27 minutes instead of playing 30 in a start. With so few options over the entire slate, he still remains an option. Let's talk point guards first. As for Lowry, he's at 8,800. We don't know if he's going to play, but we'll obviously know before lineups lock. So he becomes a good option there if he is ready to go. At 9-2 on DraftKings, you've got a couple of expensive point guards across the slate. You've got my man Isaiah Thomas, you've got Russ Westbrook, and you've got Kyle Lowry as the three high-priced players really across the entire slate. You could throw Blake Griffin in there, I guess, as one of them. Also for the Clippers. But they're the three main guys you're looking at. Lowry and Westbrook are two point guards. I sound like Pert Hapley there. Lowry and Westbrook are two point guards in that they play the point guard position. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. So there are some high-priced guys, but it's finding, you know, playing both of them means you've got to find some cheap guys to fit in, and that's where it gets into trouble. But say Lowry is out, then Joseph is your cheap player, and then maybe you put Isaiah Thomas in as well, or you put Blake Griffin in, and you can get some high-priced guys in that way. But it does depend. Now, as I said, Lowry at 8,800 is a pretty good deal if he happens to play. 92 on DraftKings is not quite as good of a situation. The Nets point guards, who knows, man? It could be anyone. It could be Isaiah Whitehead. It could be Spencer Dinwiddie. It could be neither. It could be both. We've seen that, I reckon, in the last six games. Each of those scenarios go down. Whoever's coming off the bench seems to play better until they don't, until the starter plays better. So there's no way of gauging what's going to happen with Dinwiddie. There's no way of gauging what's going to happen with Whitehead. But on a day like this in your GPPs, 3,700 for Whitehead, 3,800 for Dinwiddie, one of them could go off. In the last game, Dinwiddie had 20, Whitehead had 5. And by go off, I mean have 24 points, which is going off by their standards. You never want to put those guys in cash. Yeah, Whitehead comes at 3,500 over on DraftKings, and Dinwiddie's at 3,300. So they can be used to supplement some of these other players, but putting them in cash is just not going to be a smart idea, I don't believe. DeRozan at 8,900 on FanDuel if he returns against the Nets. I'm not loving that. 7,700 on DraftKings. I do love that. I think even if he has to be limited and play 30 minutes, 7,700, he can easily get that value. Got no problem with it. He should be able to get 40 points. But the extra price, can you guys hear this rain? Because it is absolutely pissing down here. Out of nowhere. I don't know if you can hear it, but man, I can definitely hear it. Let me know, because it is bucketing down here. Yeah, DeRozan just a little bit too highly priced. Now, as for LeVert, he's at 4,400. You cannot use that in cash. 4,300 on DraftKings. You can't use that in cash. It's a bad matchup. Would you take a flyer on him in a tournament? Yeah, but I wouldn't be holding my breath to thinking he's getting that sort of value back. Shawnee Kilpatrick had a good game in the last one, but he has been, I'd say, up and down, but that's probably a disservice to the up part, because he's just been down pretty much every game until that last one, so I wouldn't be too interested in looking at him. At small forward, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Big game, shit game. Tough matchup, 4,200. Does he start? He's definitely worth a look as a player that you can take a punt on. At 45 on DraftKings, the same. I feel better about using him than I do about using LeVert, but I still don't feel strongly about it. I also don't feel strongly about Damari. No, actually, true. I do feel strongly about Damari Carroll. He's bad, but he comes in at very cheap prices. 3,700 on FanDuel. There's a reason for it, of course, and 3,900 on DraftKings. He's averaging a putrid 15 points in the last five games. Putrid. 13 on FanDuel. But if Patterson happens to miss, they probably give him 37 minutes. If DeRozan's out again, they'll have to give him extra minutes. And maybe it comes true. Just a true tournament play in a very, very positive matchup for him. But that's all you can do. And same with Terry Ross. Get some of these blokes out. He's at 3,600. He could drop a 30 and he could come good as well. So there are lots of GPP options. And maybe going GPP heavy is the way to go. But in general, I like to go 90% cash, 10% GPP. So if you're going totally GPP heavy, it's a big risk. And that's, again, what I mentioned about this entire slate. Bojan Bogdanovic is at 43. Hey, he's a GPP guy only. Shit matchup for him. I would much rather take Carroll or Ross or those players ahead of him. The power forwards, there's not a lot here. Pat Patterson, even if he plays, it's a write-off. Trevor Booker at 5,000 in a bench role. No thanks. The centers is where we want to focus some attention. Jonas Valanciunas at 5,800. He dropped 37 in the last game. I think if we see Patterson out and one of those other two guys out, he's going to have to get the ball a fair bit more. Although the last time that Joseph played against the Nets, when he played in place of Kyle Lowry, he took all the shots and gave Valanciunas nothing. I'm not sure that will necessarily go down in this one. So I think 5,800 for JV is a pretty good price. He's at 6,000 on DraftKings, which is not as appealing. But one or two of those guys out, it's really going to work in his favor. So yeah, I'm okay with JV. Brooke Lopez at 7,200. He does well against Toronto as a general rule. He hasn't been quite there at 7,200, but I'm okay with getting into him there. But I love him on DraftKings, where he's at 6,700, just continually underpriced over there. He averages 46 the last three times he's taken on Toronto. So I feel good about that. Bebe is at 4,000. I wouldn't use Bebe unless Patterson is out. And he hasn't really been doing huge amounts at 4,000. He's been okay, but I'm not sure his upside's high enough unless Pat happens to miss the game, which is a distinct possibility at this point. He's 50-50 at the moment. I forgot to put the little graphics up. There you go. Toronto and Brooklyn. Next up, Boston. They are taking on the Portland... No, they're not. What happened to my list? Boston's not taking on Portland. Boston is taking on the Clippers. That's better. The rain is messing with me. The Celtics are favored by 5.5 and the total is 222 points. Avery Bradley is questionable. We don't know if he will be back. He is still dealing with that Achilles issue. Obviously, if he is out, it bumps up the usability of Marcus Smart. And that's really, really about it. Now, let's talk point guards. I assume that Ray Felton will continue to start for this team. He is at 4,700. He becomes, assuming Lowry plays, he becomes one of the better, well, the best cheap point guard out on the market. He's averaging 25 over the last three. So he should be a solid cash game guy to look at. The guy that actually is the point guard, or that's not true because Felton's the point guard. Rivers plays on the wing. Austin Rivers is at 5,900. He had 32 in the last game. He could face a matchup against Isaiah Thomas. That's not a tough one. So I don't think that'll be the case. I think that they'll put someone else on Rivers. They'll put Smart on him and maybe Thomas hides on Felton. But Rivers is fine in that mid-price point guard tier. They've both got decent prices over on DraftKings. Felton's at 49, Rivers is at 61, so they're just not quite as good over there. But they are useful still, worth looking at. As for my boy Isaiah Thomas, 10,600 for Thomas. It just keeps getting bigger. Now, he didn't reach value in the last game. He had 42 points. Getting value at 10,600 is a nightmare. It's really hard. Now, the Clippers have been a tough team for point guards, but Chris Paul's not around. So I think it ends up being a relatively neutral matchup for Thomas. But he needs 52 points. Maybe on a slate like this, 50 points. 48. And it's still hard to get. I would rather be taking Lowry if he plays. I would probably rather be taking Westbrook, to be honest, at that extra money. Now, on DraftKings, where he comes in at 9,900, that's a better price. That's one that I'd say, you know, Thomas becomes a good option there. Maybe even a better option than, say, Westbrook and Lowry at 9,200. I'm okay with that. But that excessive price that he comes in at FanDuel, he did not reach value in the last game. In fact, he's only, despite how well he's playing, he's only averaging 49 across the last five, and that doesn't cut it at 10,600. So use him smartly. And don't be, yeah, I don't know, just do the opposite with what I say with Thomas, basically, because I can never get him right. He could still have a big game, but that's a big, he needs a big, big game, and that might be tough. The shooting guards, JJ Redick and Jamal Crawford, both tournament-y type of players. Redick is at 49, Crawford is at 47. They're both coming off 27-pointers in the last one. They have the ability to do it again. Therefore, guy I missed out on, so we'll just talk about those guys first. Crawford and Redick, good GPP players. I would lean Redick over Crawford in most cases, but I feel that strongly about it. Marcus Smart's the other one I've got to talk about. He's at 5,700. He's averaging 28 over the last three. If Bradley's out, I feel okay about Smart. I don't feel great about it, but I feel okay. But if Bradley plays, I wouldn't feel awesome about using Marcus. They could start Jaylen Brown again. Who knows exactly what they're going to do, but Smart's going to be the more valuable play there. Now, Jay Crowder is at 6,500, so the salary's jumped. Now, on a slate like, if it was a normal slate, that would be, okay, you know what, 6,500 for Jay Crowder, I'm not having it. But with such limited options available, it becomes valuable. It's a really good matchup for him against the Clippers. He could easily drop a 35. He could drop a 40. So I do like Crowder, which in normal circumstances, I don't think I would. But that's the difficulty with this sort of a slate. Now, as for Jaylen Brown, he scored 22 points in the last game. He's at 3,800. Obviously, he would just be a long shot flyer. Mo Spates, a power forward, he's at 3,900. 20 points in the last one for Mo. I think with Blake back and DeAndre playing, it's really a tough ask to hope that he gets it. And a tough ask is also relying upon the Boston power forwards, Amir Johnson, Jonas Jerebko, to play consistent enough minutes. As for Blake Griffin, 9,200, it's a lot, but he looked great in his last game. Scored 49 points in that one. He comes in at 8,600 on DraftKings. I think Blake is definitely a fine guy to use. You pair him with one of those expensive point guards and try and fill out your roster in other ways, maybe. I wouldn't say that they're necessarily the core guys you want to have in, but at the end of the day, they're going to be players that you end up having in, or they're going to be in a lot of lineups. I'm almost convinced of that. At center, we've got Al Horford, who at 7,400 on FanDuel in a matchup against DeAndre Jordan. I'll probably say let's look in a different direction. He's at 69 on DraftKings, which is fine. I'm happy to go with him there. I still don't feel overly great about it. DeAndre Jordan, I don't feel all that good about either. 7,600 for DeAndre, averaging under 29 points in the last five. That's nowhere near where he needs to be. The matchup for him is a mild positive, and the fact that his salary has dropped by 4,000 is impressive, and he's at 7,000 on DraftKings, which is doubly impressive, and he does well against Boston. So there's factors going in his direction, and there are a lot of factors going against him. On this sort of a slate, he's definitely in play. You know, I would probably want to take a look at him now. With Horford being $100 cheaper than him on DraftKings, it's a Horford one. With it being, you know, Horford being $200 cheaper on FanDuel, I probably want to look at Jordan more in the GPP setting. I know that doesn't sound like it makes much sense, but it's his salary ratio and all that sort of stuff we want to look at. But all in all, it's, you know, Horford probably does get the nod over Jordan in most cases, but I think if you're looking GPP, I would have to think that Jordan has a higher ceiling. It's a tough one. He does very well against Al Horford, and that's leaning leaning for me to say a GPP, I would feel more Jordan-ish, and a cash Horford on DraftKings is probably more the way to go. But you could look at it in multiple directions. And I guess it depends. Neither of these guys are guys that you're locking in. So it depends on what other players you have got set into your lineups as to whether you afford them or who you afford in your lineup. This rain is just crazy. I don't know if you can hear it, but it is so loud. Portland and Oklahoma City. We have got the Thunder favored by 4.5, and the total is 216 points and a half points. Alex Abrines is questionable. He's missed the last few with back spasms. Let's talk point guards. Russ Westbrook is at 12,400. Russ is just getting points whenever he wants to. You could say this is a negative matchup, but it's not. If you look on the ease ranking, it is. But it's Russ. It's the Blazers. He should tear him apart. You should be looking at 55, 60 points here for Russell. So, yeah, he would be the guy that I would want over Isaiah Thomas, especially on FanDuel. On DraftKings, where he's at 12.8, I lean a little bit more towards Isaiah there, but there is no issue with using Russ. The problem is they bumped him $1,300. That makes it a real tough sell, but no issue with using Russell Westbrook whatsoever. At the Blazers side of things, Dame Lillard's at 8,300, has been getting nowhere near that recently. It's a GPP play. It is a good matchup for him, but it's a GPP only. He's down to 7,500 on DraftKings. It's not low enough for me to consider him cash, but it's getting close to it at that sort of a price tag. And if I was desperate, I would use him in cash on DraftKings. I wouldn't on FanDuel, but I would consider it on DraftKings at that lower salary that he's currently at. The shooting guards, Vic Oladipo's at 5,700. Hasn't quite been where he needs to be, but we know the Blazers should allow a little bit of a bump in production. He's at 5,400 on DraftKings. I like Vic Oladipo here. And CJ McCollum's at $8,000. I feel better about McCollum producing than I do about Lillard, and he is $300 cheaper, so he is fine to use. I would consider McCollum more a GPP guy in FanDuel, and on DraftKings more of a cash and GPP, where he's at 7,200, and the dude's averaging 42 points over the last three. So he has been playing well, and I like that cheaper price for him over on DraftKings as well. Alan Crabb is just a GPP guy, but he has not been producing very much at all. Small forward Evan Turner is at 4,900. That's a good way to get some of these dearer guys in. He had 32 in the last game. In general, he's been playing the bulk of the minutes at small forward. Hasn't been every game, but in general, he has been doing that. At 5,000 on DraftKings, I'm not quite as in love with him at that extra salary. I do like it a lot more on FanDuel. Mo Harkless, 3,800 he's down to now, Mo, because he's not playing. He's averaging 11 points over the last five. So sure, you want to take a flyer on someone, Mo Harkless could be that guy. I have no faith in it, no confidence at all. At power forward, Domantas Sabonis. He went from a guy that 2 games ago had a double-double in 35 minutes. Last game, he scored negative 1.8 points. He's at minimum salary, 3,500 on FanDuel. He's at 31 on DraftKings. With the way that Billy Donovan has been running that big man rotation without Kanter, Sabonis 1 game, Grant 1 game, LaVerne the next game, could it be back to Sabonis' term? That's what makes him a GPP option to me, because if they go to him for 30-plus minutes and he gets a double-double and blocks some shots, then shit, he's going to smash that value. But if you look at the last game where he had negative 2 points, you would have zero confidence. El-Farouq Aminu at 5,300. The minutes have been fine for Aminu lately. The production's been all right. I'm not sure how high his upside is, but I feel like he's decently solid at that sort of a price, whereas not Noah Vonleh is probably the opposite of solid. At center, we've got some value here. Steve Adams at 6,100. Love it against the Blazers. Should be able to get 30 points comfortably. Joffrey LaVerne at 3,700. A little bit point chasing here, but if they go back to him, then he's going to smash through 3,700. So he becomes a GPP option. You can have your GPP lineups, one with Sabonis, one with LaVerne in a lot of cases. Not on DraftKings, so they do come as different positions, but on FanDuel, they're different positions. On DraftKings, their positions are interchangeable. So you could do one lineup with one lineup with the other. A good way of setting up some GPP setups. Mason Plumlee's at 7,000. Playing well, but not that well lately. And then he gets the Steven Adams defense, which is a negative. So you can get Steve Adams for $1,000 less, who's got a much more friendly matchup. I like Plumlee. I just happen to like Adams more. Now, over on DraftKings, it's a different story because Adams is at 5,600 and Mason Plumlee's at 59. It's a massive, massive price difference. So I would consider both of those guys. I still would like Adams over him, but Plumlee has to be in consideration over on that side. All right, that does it for today's show. Thank you, everyone. Ah, no, what am I talking about? Let's do picks of the day. FanDuel, Ray Felton, 4,700. Now, let's go start again. There are some people who do watch the show and they just go straight to the picks of the day. If you just follow the picks of the day, I think you're doing yourself a big disservice. If you just tune in for these last 5 minutes, write these down, go, these are the guys I'm playing, I don't think you're doing it right. That's not what these are intended to be. These are guys that I think have got good value, but I do go through and talk about the situations, what they're involved in during the games. Now, if you press for time, maybe you can get something out of it, but it also feels like you're burning your money if you just do that without hearing the analysis behind why I would pick these guys and in what situation I would pick them and the ways that things can go. FanDuel, Ray Felton, 4,700. Austin Rivers, 59. And Russ Westbrook, 12-4. At shooting guard, Reddix at 47. Oladipo's at 57. And McCollum comes in at 8,000. The small forwards, Evan Turner, 49. Jay Crowder, 65. At power forward, Sabonis at 35. Aminu at 53. And Blake at 92. And the centres, Joffrey Laverne at 37. And Steve Adams at 61. For DraftKings, Isaiah Whitehead, 35. Lillard at 75. And Thomas at 99. Shooting guards, Tezza Ross, 4,000, McCollum, 72. The small forwards, Ray Felton, 49. Yes, Ray Felton has got point guard / small forward eligibility on DraftKings. Jay Crowder, 62. At power forward, Domantas Sabonis, 31. Blake Griffin, 86. And at center, Laverne at 32 and Adams at 59. Let's look at the Aussies now. Good luck setting a lineup if you're in Australia for these, with the game starting at 4 a.m. Spencer Dinwiddie, 38, Austin Rivers, 56, and Westbrook at 13-1. The shooting guards, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, 41, Oladipo, 61, and Ross at 38. The small forwards, Crowder at 63, power forwards, Laverne at 35, Aminu at 5,000, and Griffin at 8,000. The centers, Noguera at 4,400, Adams at 56, and Lopez at 73. On draft stars, Ray Felton, 7,350, Oladipo, 11,250, and Westbrook, 23,100. At shooting guard, Hollis Jefferson, 7,350. McCollum, 13,300. Small forward, LeVert at 7,000. Evan Turner, 8,650. At power forward, Sabonis at 5,300. Maminu at 8,750. And Horford at 14,250. And at center, LeVert at 73. Adams at 95. And Blakey Griffin at 15,500. Now we're done. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends if you enjoy the podcast. Hit me up with any questions, comments, constructive criticisms, or positive feedback. It's always good to hear that stuff and hear that you guys are enjoying the show. Thanks to everyone who has sent me in emails or tweets telling me how they enjoy the show, how they consume the show, and what it means to them, because that means a lot to me to hear that you guys love it and that it's incorporated into part of your daily attitude. Well, not attitude? Wrong word. This rain, man, it's killing my brain. Daily routine. If your team is in the Super Bowl, good luck. Go Falcons, go Patriots. Neither of those are my team because I'm a Miami Dolphins man, and they will never, ever seem to get into the Super Bowl. But you never know. I thought that about my AFL team as well. And here we are with the Western Bulldogs as champion, which gives me an excuse to play this. This is my crowd recording of me at the AFL Grand Final playing our theme song after we won. In the second verse, we hear some highly emotional singing from us truly. Remembering a very, very important and very emotional day in my life last year. So just feel free to turn it off. We're done. Unless you want to hear me sing the Bulldogs theme song in about 20 seconds time, then keep listening. If not, see you later. Bulldogs fight and Bulldogs run. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Carmelo Anthony.